Hello and welcome to Book Bites, a book club podcast for developer, or a zine or zine podcast today. We're talking about the Pico 8 zine. I'm Adam.
I'm Jason.
So Jason, tell us about this zine or zine, however you say it.
Sure. I'm in the zine camp, if only for like shorthand magazine. And that's very much what this is. I guess I was the one that actually proposed this because I was just kind of looking for ideas. And one thing that stood out to me was that, like, it was kind of short, and also it made me think of some other zines that I had seen just in the programming community. I know Julia Evans is one who puts out a number of these on her own, and where it's just kind of like a very condensed type of book. Like, I mean, lots of information and done in a way that's pretty accessible. Like, it's not like reference type material. It's like, I mean, here's some stuff to work with, or like here's something that's just kind of interesting, but not in super long form. So,
yeah. And this was interesting. I'd never really read a zine before. And I always thought it was pronounced Zine because it's just Z-I-N-E.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was really fun. As soon as you mentioned it, I thought, okay, that sounds really hard, but it's short. So if I don't like it, it'll be over soon. And it's like 40-something pages, but really less than that because the last few pages are just, here's some example games. But I guess we should talk about what Pico 8 is.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that was a really nice part of this is that right at the start, it actually gives a history of the Pico 8 so by Joseph White or Zepp. And he's actually the creator of the Pico 8 and kind of gave the rundown of his thought process on it. And so, I mean, from like if I were to go and condense it really short, like a Pico 8 is like a... Think like a retro gaming console. Think like Commodore 64 or something like that, where like you had like limited screen size set of things that you could do, like color palettes and like sounds and so forth. And it's done in a way that it's spec'd out with certain things, but runs as an emulator on various machines. And so I believe that the author decided to call it a fantasy console. So like there's no actual hardware that exists, but instead it's just an emulator that it runs on top of whatever OS that you do have.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't really think of it like an emulator because it's not emulating an actual console, but really that's what it is. It's a program that runs code written in. Is it a language? I could never figure out exactly what language you write the game.
The games are actually written in Lua.
Lua, okay.
And Lua is a language that I've toyed with in the past, and it is designed to be like a very embeddable language. Like that's its purpose. Like it's not a very batteries included language, but instead it's more designed to say, like, if you want to go and extend your program or like allow scripting of it, like Lua is a good choice for it because it's a very small virtual machine that can run even more stripped down if you need it to be. Some common places for it, firstly, would be like World of Warcraft plugins. Those are written in Lua because it can be totally sandboxed. And then I believe that like Adobe Lightroom also supports plugins written in Lua. And then there's also kind of a scene around like making games using Lua as well, with things like Love 2D, which is another way of making games with Lua. And that's actually like my first exposure to Lua and game making. There was kind of a cool project that I had seen pop up somewhere called it's Mari Zero. So think like Mario, but with the zero at the end. And think of the game like the classic Super Mario Brothers, but it is combined with the game Portal. So like, instead of just jumping over stuff, like sometimes you need to actually cast a portal and like walk through that and go elsewhere.
Ah, yeah. I think I first heard of Lua when it came to NeoVim.
Oh yeah.
And also there's this app called Hammerspoon, which is for automating macOS, and you write plugins for it in Lua.
Yeah. It's an interesting language. Like, it's sort of like alternate universe to JavaScript, or like its origins actually come around the same time. And it's definitely has some similarities in that, like, there are not a lot of like built-in data types, especially like when they were initially created. Lua itself actually only has one core data type in it, and that is the table. And that represents both objects, like think JavaScript object and think array. So like key value lookup or like index based things. And just based on whether you use numerical values or string values, like that determines that. And then inheritance is prototypal, like, and it could do that. And I don't know. Cool.
So it's really interesting. In Pico 8, these programs you write are called cartridges, because it's like a fantasy console and you're sticking the game cartridge in. And there's all sorts of stuff built into the emulator, like the code editor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a command line with a few simple commands. And not only a code editor, but can create music and sounds and sprites. Like right there, you can pick from like just a few colors and draw your sprites there. So I thought that was really interesting, because all of this has the same limitations as the actual console. The same number of pixels across is where you're typing in your code. And it can be hard to type in there and tell what letter is which. Like, is that an M or an N? And you get used to it after a while, but it can be challenging. And there's no capital letters, because there's so few pixels, you couldn't do a capital N and a lowercase.
Yeah, that throws me off. Like,
did you notice when you type a capital letter, it just does weird symbols?
Yes, I did notice that. And I did not find like what the purpose is behind the strange symbol. Like, is
me
either. I mean, maybe that's used like if you're doing like a text output or something like that, and you want to show like, I'm sure there's one for like a sun or something like that, I think I saw, but
yeah I don't know if it counts as the actual letter. I never tried typing code in uppercase. So you just read it all in lowercase, even though it looks like uppercase on the screen.
Yeah.
And you have a limited number of lines of code or number of characters you can have in your program or something like that. There's a lot of limitations. And the controller itself, even though there's not a real controller, you can use a controller, or you can use a computer keyboard. There's just the arrow keys and two buttons. Mm-hmm. So on the keyboard, that's Z or X. And then enter is kind of like the start button, I guess. It gets you to the menu.
Yeah, so kind of think like classic NES type controller.
Yeah, minus the select button.
Yes. Who would have thought that like that was excessive? But I guess it's true, and you can do a lot with it.
I don't remember what the select button was used for in NES.
Usually, like if you were on the start screen and you wanted to change between one player and two instead of up and down for some reason. So I would say like one thing with the editor that really throws me off, because it's like a command line looking editor, like with a flashing cursor.
Yeah.
I really wanted to use Vim operations in it.
Me too.
and you can't.
Yeah.
And so I did see that there are Vim plugins that let you like edit one of the Pico or the P8 type file, and Vim will open it. And they actually made like a corresponding color scheme to go along with it too. Like you can't do the like sound editor and stuff like that. But
that would be weird.
But to do the code editing, you can do that. And I don't know, it was an interesting find.
Yeah. So this Zine, after it explains what Pico 8 is and its history, it does basically two example programs and then like a small bonus one.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is like a one player Pong game, or it's kind of like Breakout, but without any blocks. And then a train simulation,
mm-hmm.
like a little train going around a track. And I did the paddle game, and I was really amazed at how little code it took to create that. It was really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was nice to get the really fast feedback, especially because to hop between your editor and then like your game running really doesn't take much. Like there's no real build step. You just write it, and I mean, you can type run, but also like you can actually do like Control R and it will run right from there as well. So you can even skip over, you can skip over like going through the command line to execute it. So, yeah, it was nice to get that feedback. And like, you are right that it takes little code to get something. But at the same time, what I noticed is that like the real polish that we feel in games is like mm-hmm. in that kind of, you know, that 10%, you know, like where it's like, okay, my ball has hit the side of my brick on the bottom, and with that, because it's contacting the side, and my code says invert its direction, if you hit it just right, then it would send the ball upward, and then it would send it back downward because it was touching it between two updates. Because the code is written in a way that it assumes that it hits the top and not the side of it. And
yeah, I think I got one where it hit my paddle one time, and then the ball just went up and down and up and down and up and down a whole bunch of times. And so I just got mm-hmm. a bunch of points for free.
Yeah.
Did you make a breakout version?
I mean, I didn't go and make a full breakout version. No, just okay. just like the
I did go and explore some of the games that you can play that other people have made, and I found one that's like Breakout or Brick Breaker, and it was pretty cool. It has 6 different levels you go through.
That's cool.
It didn't really do points, but you know, you break all the bricks and you go to the next level.
Nice.
And you can choose what speed you wanted it to go.
That would be an interesting exercise to go through in the future. It's kind of like the process of levels, like what you do to go and like progress into the next state. Like reset everything, and like do you use like the map maker and move to a separate section, or like I don't know, just like going through that process. It's not something that I did with this.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. Yeah.
and then there was the sound editor that I feel like you just kind of got dropped into, or at least I felt like that way when going into the sound editor of the Pico 8, of like you just start kind of clicking around on stuff or dragging stuff around and seeing what sound it makes.
Yeah.
And yeah. I thought it was interesting that the article had said that like they don't particularly use the one with the bars.
Yeah.
Like, this is personally, I don't use this mode because of its lack of precision, and so I can't tell you much about it. Like,
that was pretty interesting. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
And I mean, I guess I could see that because it was hard to go and get any sort of precision there, but it is kind of interesting to see it from that point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're in the editor mode, it actually does let you use your mouse mm-hmm. to click around. So that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good little affordance. It would be.
Reminds me of like the original Nintendo had a mouse you could plug into it for Mario Paint.
Oh yeah. I thought that was Super Nintendo, but I do remember Super Mario Nintendo. Paint, and thank you for raising that again. It's been a while.
Yeah, I think Mario Paint had an area where you could make music too.
Yeah.
It was like sound effects, like the sound Yoshi makes.
I guarantee that if you YouTube it, somebody has made some master creation with it.
Yeah.
I will go and look for that after this.
This episode of Book Bites is brought to you by VSchool. VSchool is a one-of-a-kind online school designed to help you land a job in tech. Alumni leave VSchool job-ready with a technical portfolio of real projects and industry experience. The average starting salary of a VSchool graduate is $72,000. They have online, full-time, and part-time classes customized to fit your schedule. They have weekly start dates, so you can begin right away. You don't have to wait around for the beginning of a semester or something. You can start right now. They have a web development course and a UX UI design course. They're GI Bill approved, so you can use your GI Bill education benefits to fund your tuition. And they have an income share agreement where you don't have to pay anything until you land a job. So they're really committed to helping you find that job after you graduate. And they have several different scholarships. Right now, there's a You Belong in Tech full ride scholarship and a $6,000 community relief scholarship for those affected by the pandemic. Their graduates work at some amazing places like Apple, Adobe, a bunch of others, and actually two places that I've worked at. They have this great chart on their site that compares vSchool to boot camps, traditional school, and being self-taught, and the difference is remarkable. Boot camps and being self-taught give you skills. Traditional school gives you the theory, and I've experienced that myself. But vSchool gives you both skills, theory, experience, and a job. You can go to their website right now and watch videos from past graduates, check out the current scholarships, and you can quickly schedule time to talk with them. If you've been thinking about making a change, it can't hurt to check them out. So go to vschool.io. Again, that's vschool.io, and let them know that you heard about them from BookBytes.
And then, after doing a little bit of sound editing, I mean, we got dropped into the train exercise.
Yeah, I went through and I coded up the entire train thing. And then it just kind of shows you a picture of what the sprites should look like. And you kind of have to go and try to draw it out by hand, I guess. And then when I ran the program, I finally got it to run without any errors. And it didn't do anything. I tried hitting Z, I had tried hitting X, nothing. So I don't know what I did wrong, and I went back several times to check my code. It drew a few things on the screen, and that's it.
I did have more success than that. Like my train did move when I initially started it, but then it actually got stuck in a corner because I forgot to put a negative in one place. So I did go and track that down, so my train could go and do the square.
I did notice a bug in the code.
Yeah.
In the book. And this is my one complaint about the code in the book. There's no color coding. And it seems like the spacing is off. Like sometimes you can't tell if there's a space.
Yes. So the indentation threw me for a wild ride with that if tree.
So they tend not to indent unless they need to. So like inside of a function, they don't indent anything inside the function because you know you're inside of a function, I guess. And it would just, you're on a tiny screen, so yeah. Why not indent? But the bug is in that long if statement, and they do a comment that says bottom side. And then they put the word then after that. But that then should be on a new line, not in a comment.
Oh, interesting. I guess I missed that because I was there. Maybe, I don't know, like self-corrected, not
yeah, attention. Because you know how an if then works, right? But right. I probably didn't do it because I'm not even used to if statements having the word then in it. And also, I made a mistake the first time I went through here, and I didn't realize with this font that it was a square bracket around this array that it's using for the train. And I did parentheses everywhere.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I don't know what this parenthesis is.
Yeah.
It can be really hard just kind of looking at it. And the first time I came across an asterisk, I was like, what the heck character is that?
Makes you appreciate modern resolution for some things, huh?
Yeah.
Feel like that's something I would go down the path of is finding a way to edit outside, like edit code outside and then import it back in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I admire the fact that they added all of this directly into the emulator and that it actually, it's workable. It's doable. At the same time, I hate it. I hate actually using it.
Right. It's sheer novelty. It feels like, and I mean, and it yeah, like you said, it's cool that it's all there. Like you don't have to get anything else, but spending much time in it, you can feel the pain. Along with the train exercise, I did learn some things about the way that the Pico 8 deals with transparency, and that like by default, black represents the color of transparent.
Okay.
And I noticed some odd behavior where my train would go around and my tracks were black, or I made them the color black, and it would actually leave my like whatever color my train was on the track. So as it went around, like, that color stuck. And I wasn't quite clear as to like why that was happening, but then I realized, like, it's just the track and I am drawing black. And just like when you do a sprite, like, everything around it is black, meaning, like, don't draw here. And so there is actually a function you can say, like, do treat this color as transparent or don't. And so I have to go and would have to go and pull the name of it, but you can say, like, don't treat black as transparent and actually draw that color out. And doing that fixed it. So I had to do it when I was drawing the map, and that made it so the train drew correctly, or the tracks didn't change to red because I had a red train.
Nice.
Yeah. And then there's that tiny snippet, the geodesic.
Oh yeah, I did that one. I did that one. I forgot.
I mean, really short, but also like kind of gratifying, like, with how it looked. It's kind of a cool effect to see. Like, I mean, you look like you're falling into something, or like.
So it's basically something like 4 or 5 different squares that are spinning at different rates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. It's only like 50 lines of code or less.
Yeah, and that, I always think that, that's one of the cool things. It's just like when it doesn't take much, and yet there's so much that comes out of it, or like it doesn't take much code, but like it gives like a really cool effect. Like, I could see that used for like, say, an intro screen or something like that, where
you
wanted a good splashy thing.
You've got the name of the game right there, and it says start, press start or something.
Right. Yeah. Just all you got to do is make a sprite or a couple of sprites for the name of your game, and like,
yeah,
there you go, like, done.
Yep. And then there's one other that's a smoke particle. I didn't really do that one, but I'm sure it's cool.
Yeah,
but I wanted to ask, did you play other games that have that are more extensive?
So I mean, there's the, I guess, most prominent Pico 8 game that is Celeste, and I did play that for a little while. I know you had said that you struggled without having a controller, and I would agree with that. Like,
did you play with a controller?
A
keyboard?
I did it a bit on a keyboard, and Celeste,
I wanted to like switch my hands, because, you know, on a keyboard the arrows on the right side,
mm-hmm.
but and then the X and Z are on the left side, and I wanted to try to figure out a way to hold my keyboard like a controller, but I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Also, like, just with the arrow keys, it's just too hard having just 4 distinct buttons. I want to be able to just move it to the top right.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to aim at the top right, because the way this game works is you have jump and dash. And if you jump while you dash, you can jump really far, but you have to be pointing in the right direction to land on the right platform. And so I made it past the first screen, and that's about it.
Yeah, I did a few screens, but I actually have the game Celeste, or like the production game of it, on my Nintendo Switch. Mm-hmm. And like,
is it the same kind of jumping mechanism?
Yeah, so it is the jump and dash. Like, they carried that over really well, and I mean, it still has a very similar pixelated type of feel to it that they did. Like, the artwork is really well done, and like kind of carries to the tradition of the original Celeste, but at the same time, it's I don't know what you would call it, where it's like, it's low fidelity in some ways, but also other things, like they definitely do use what's available on the Switch, like just some of the particle effects and stuff. And and there's a plot along with it too. And so it's a really good game in general. And it's nice because like you can play it, but then you can also play it for like completion. Like, they have harder things. I think they have, I guess they have the strawberries in this as well. And it's a similar thing in the Switch version of Celeste, where Like you can push yourself to do the harder things if you want to, or you can just aim to like make it through the level because like all it does is like changes the ending. Like you get different endings based on that, but like you don't need them to unlock something in particular. But as for this game, Celeste, like I actually went and pulled open the P8 file. It's a really awesome part of it is like you can go and look at the code of any of the games, and it's just readily available. And
so it's open source by default. I guess there's really no way to hide the code, is there?
Right. Yeah, like it, because it's baked in. I mean, maybe there would be a way to like obfuscate it, I guess.
But,
outside of that, I mean, I did go and find a cool resource though. Is someone actually went through the Lua code and went and added annotations. So there's a GitHub repo of the Lua file that they say like this is what's going on here. And I mean, the code itself has a like it's pretty readable with things in general. Like they go and like create tables to represent the various like sprites or things that are on screen, and each one of those things has its own update and draw on it. So every object or everything on screen says like this is what I need to do on this loop, and this is how I need to represent myself. And so it seems like a pretty cool pattern, because then after they do that, they just go and loop through all of them. But the annotated source was cool to read, and seeing it too. All the levels are just different squares on the map. So when they progress through the levels, you just move to a different section on the big map editor.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I really liked this game called PAT Shooter. And it's just like a, you have a little ship on screen and you can move around up, down, left, and right and shoot enemies that are coming at you, and they're shooting at you as well. So it's like, well, it's kind of like Space Invaders, I guess, but more kind of freeform.
That sounds interesting. Like what was it that stood out about? Like, was it, did it get like overwhelming where there were a lot of things on screen at once? Or,
well, I didn't really get that far, but there's something, you have a normal gun, and then as you kill enemies, you get more and more of these rockets lining up at the bottom of your screen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hit the other button, then all of those launch at the same time, and they're homing rockets.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of cool. If you get a bunch of enemies on screen and you've built up some of those, you can just launch all of them.
That would be interesting logic to see. It's like the homing logic. Like, I mean,
yeah, because they kind of like zigzag around and then they find their target. I don't know how they're doing that.
Yeah. Like, and that's the cool thing is that you could go and dig in and see like how that works too.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. I guess a couple other things that I saw like in relation to the Pico 8 while I was researching on it as well is there's an open source one, because firstly the Pico 8 itself is not open source, and like you have to buy it for $15, and then I mean you get a copy,
although you can play the games online for free.
Yes, so there is an emulator there, or like at least the runnable portion there, so you are right. But there's one that's called the TIC 80, T-I-C 80. Hmm. And it has like a similar approach to where you have the editor and like sound editor and everything baked in. I think it comes with like a slightly different resolution and some different constraints of its own, because I mean different author of it. And mm-hmm. I had actually heard about that because of a person who goes by the name of Technomancy online, or Phil Hagelberg. And he is a maintainer of a language called Fennel. And Fennel is a Lisp-flavored Lua, would be the best way to describe it. So it's like you write in a Lisp-type syntax, but it produces Lua output. But you get some of the benefits of a Lisp, where you can use like macros and it has some other nice things baked in, but it just compiles down to straight Lua. But he wrote a game for the TIC 80 that is called This Is My Mech. And think of like Power Rangers, like assembling various mechs together. And he has a blog post about like why he chose to write it, and like because he made it for a game jam and like what he based it on. But it was an interesting thing to read about, and how he went through the process of adding Fennel support to the TIC 80, like first class type of support to it. And so another, yeah, that was another related thing. And also a thing that is not so low level is there's a tool called Make Code Arcade. It's made by Microsoft. And you can make games using like a Scratch type syntax in the browser, or like blocks that you move around. And they make some things really easy where it's like, draw me a sprite. And then like that sprite has a variable name, and you say control the sprite with the directional pad. And then like it gives you that. So very low amount of code necessary to get something interactive and really fast feedback. And what is kind of cool is there are actually devices that can run that. And so like Adafruit makes one that's called the Pi game. And it can take that game that you write in the browser, and you have like a little device, like handheld device that it can run on. So,
oh, nice.
A lot of really cool things like in that space of like working within the limited constraints.
Is it the Super Game Pi?
So there's one called the Pi Gamer, but I think that there are a number of them that it can get uploaded to. So worth checking out if you want to, especially work with like a someone who isn't great with syntax related things, like working with younger kids. Like rather than worrying about syntax and have them worry about like game logic, like it's really good for that.
Nice. Well, yeah, there's a big world out there with retro gaming and coding games that I was not aware of. That's pretty cool.
Agreed. That's about all I got.
Yeah, you gonna make any more games after this?
I think I may tinker around with that smoke exercise, because I also did not get to that, and just for like completionist's sake, I want to go and work through that. And then also I want to tinker with the TIC 80 as well, only because it does have Fennel support, and I've done a little bit of stuff with Fennel in the past, and it would be kind of interesting to see like how that fits in there. So
cool. Yeah. Sounds good.